welcome to the Pocket Gamer iPhone and iPad Gaming Podcast, episode number 220. I am your host, James Gilmore, and joining me on this very special still winter edition of the podcast is Keith. I can't believe it's this cold. Andrew?
Hello.
Hello.
I can't believe it's this cold.
And John, no, seriously, I can't believe it's this cold. Jordan?
It's not cold, though. Lovely where we are. It's been a lovely...
I was just saying,
if I'd actually been awake at any point during the time when it's not night, thanks to my jet lag, it's lovely. It's been a lovely sunny week. I'm informed.
It's been snowing down south, you see, where it's nice and sunny up here.
Yeah, in London, and I'm in Bournemouth. This is supposedly the holiday town with the beach, and I'm looking out my window watching snow fall on April the 4th.
Really?
I am outraged. It's Sprinter. It's this new season that they've come up with to replace spring. I'm very put out.
It was lovely in San Francisco as well.
I'm sure it was, yes. It's been a long time. Listeners, we haven't heard from Keith and John for a while because they have been gallivanting around San Francisco at GDC. How was that, chaps? Did you see lots of pretty games?
I saw lots.
I should let Keith, because I've been before, but Keith was the newbie, so you should give the point.
My GDC experience involved lots of planes.
Mm-hmm.
Five planes.
Six planes.
Six planes? Oh, you had another one from... Oh, of course, yeah.
Yeah, my plane got cancelled on the way back, so I had a little mini Heathrow to Manchester plane at the end. lots of coffee, muffins. there was really nice cookies in the afternoon, but they went very quickly.
Any games at all?
Yeah, a few. I walked about a bit, and it was very sunny.
I guess the other thing we should say with Keith was covering more of like the biz track stuff, so he was in a lot more lectures.
Lots of nice seats. Business muffins he was having.
Comfy seats, and my big thing about GDC is that all the talks ran on time, exactly on time. Ooh. Every day, and that doesn't happen anywhere.
That's true. They overran at the couple I've been to.
Always by the end of the day, like half an hour behind. Mm. But these were literally... No, they weren't taking any funny business. If you got the end of your time and you were off that stage.
Properly punctual. I understand you're both a little bit under the weather, I have to say, at this point. Everyone's got some horrible GDC lurgy, haven't they?
Yeah, it's John got it.
Not that saying GDC is an orgy of games, but yeah, everyone's dying. It's actually really funny, like 3 o'clock this morning, not all my friends, but quite a lot of people who'd been at GDC on Facebook just like, oh, I really can't get to sleep. And all the other people who couldn't get to sleep were liking it. Problem is, by this stage of the week, everyone's got past, everyone's tried various solutions like taking sleeping pills or drinking or something. And you get to this stage of the week where it's like the fourth day you've been back and you still can't sleep anything like normal hours. And everyone just gives up. It's like, what can you do?
You're just going to have to be a zombie for the rest of the week. That's how it does.
Anyway, there we go.
Well, while you've been away gallivanting, we've had a bit of news, and I'm sure you can tell us a few things as well. There's been some sad news about LucasArts that we'll briefly talk about. There's interesting stuff about a new sci-fi RPG from the guys who did Ravensaw. And you can just tell us all the things, all the games you've seen at GDC in this week's news. Right, first things first, as usual, we'll cover the update for this week. The first game we'll talk about is Rad Soldiers, which is the turn-based, top-down, kind of colourful game from Warchest. I always automatically want to say Warcraft, because I'm a person. Yeah, Warchest. They are working on, we just got news of it, a brand new update, which is going to bring a whole bunch of new maps, new levels, all set in Rio de Janeiro. You get a couple of new characters, a big heavy dude called Tree Mendez, and some other person called Tito, and they'll give you a couple of new weapons, a bunch of new levels, and some new maps, all set in this exotic location. We haven't got an actual date for when it's going to land, but it will be coming, we hope, pretty soon, pretty imminently soon, I should think. But out, actually, at this very moment, we have an update for Middle Manager of Justice, which is that Double Fine freemium game in which you have to look after an imaginary city by controlling the actions of a bunch of superheroes. You're like the head guy who runs it. And they have added a new hero, one lassie called Gloomerang, There's a bio up on the site. You can go and have a look. And there's also a bunch of new bad guys as well. There's a list of most wanted thugs that you can now identify. And work your way through, go and find them all around the city. The other thing is that there are meteorites that have fallen amongst the city now. And if you go and collect them, you get buffs to your character. So it'll give you increased powers and speed and that sort of thing. It was actually one of the games that we quite liked, one of the freemium games we were a fan of. Because it's Double Fine and Tim Schafer and that lot, and they generally have a good sense of humor.
Isn't it technically not Double Fine? Aren't they publishing it? It was a separate group from Double Fine.
I thought it was developed by Double Fine and it was published by Dragoo.
Oh, maybe that was it then.
One of the two.
Yeah, something. It was the game that I remember because they put it live by mistake because the guy never put an iOS game live before and he pressed the button and didn't know he was putting it live.
He pressed the red button.
Yeah. And then he was getting the train home and it was like, everyone was going, oh, I love your game, but it's a bit broken. He's like, it's not live. And it was live.
Oh, dear.
He wrote a hilarious blog post about it.
Okay, fair enough. Well, hopefully this went up on purpose. We assume this was a deliberate update and it wasn't just an accident. Now, moving on to actual news. We'll touch on this briefly because it is sort of links to iOS and it's just generally interesting and a little bit sad. LucasArts, the company which has been responsible, obviously founded by Lucasfilm, George Lucas, and responsible for umpteen Star Wars games over the years, but also played host to Ron Gilbert and Tim Schafer's work during the kind of late 80s, early 90s.
Okay.
What were you going to say?
I was so desperate to get in on this one.
No, go for it.
See, I'm probably like the anti-LucasArts kind of person.
Even the 80s content, Monkey Island.
To me, though, LucasArts, pretty much by the 90s, LucasArts had died. It killed itself by that stage. Mm. By the time all those guys had left, I mean, the whole thing was that. And for me, LucasArts was constantly harking back to, oh, do you remember when they did that? Or, you know, and they did. Basically, they put out just a load of old toss. It was just like, I mean, I'm really not a Star Wars fan at all. I mean, I think the worst. After the first three, you know, I'm old enough to have watched them as a kid, but. Everything after that was absolute pump, and just LucasArts as a whole thing was just, it wasn't just the game. I mean, the game side was actually notorious. If you know game developers over the last 10 years, the amount of people I've come across who worked at LucasArts and just said it was the most dysfunctional thing going. It was
really?
They had enormous staff. They paid them loads of money because obviously they made loads of money off Star Wars games. Mm. They just, the games took forever to make. They were just like managing by committees. The people who worked there were quite smart, experienced people, but they just seemed to build a structure that meant they never made good games. Right. Even on iOS, has been pointed out, they licensed it out to THQ, completely messed them all. I mean, the whole thing was just like a cluster F, you know.
Quite just, one of those.
It's interesting. I think the best thing about LucasArts, it just lets journalists talk about, like we've done today, like the top 10 licenses that should be kind of resurrected from it, and that's what everyone's written, because literally they've not done anything good for 10 years. I mean,
it's true. We're still referencing Tim Schafer and that lot because that's pretty much all there is to reference in terms of the halcyon days of the company. Thing is, the one thing I do remember liking, obviously, is X-Wing and TIE Fighter. That was the last time, I think, in my eyes, they were really good.
I mean, I genuinely do think when they were doing all the kind of point and click adventures, and when they got pretty early into the 3D stuff, so doing those kind of like those space combat games, because that was at a time when that was technically quite difficult to do, and they did like I can't remember what it was called, the first person shoot. They did some of the early first person shooters.
Oh, they did like Dark Knight. Yeah. The Jedi Knight, Jedi Academy, and they did Dark Forces. Dark Forces was quite good. That was the first person.
So, and that was a time I think when they had like their developers were really good developers. They had small teams. Mm. It wasn't this massive bloated structure. They got games out quickly. It was in the Star Wars galaxy that everyone loved and hadn't just been like trawled to death with like just.
It was still cool at that point, yeah.
But after that, I mean, what was Lucas going to do? I mean, it was kind of funny though, because the amount of times you wrote, I remember a couple of years ago writing an article about they integrated the games team from LucasArts in with the movie team. They're like, oh, we have this kind of technology where the games guys can share the film assets, and it's like we wrote all this kind of glowing stuff from a tech standpoint about how blah blah blah, and you talk to people about it and it's like, oh, it just didn't work. It was absolutely real. Like, you know, I think it's like an old racehorse. It's, you know, sometimes it has to be put out of its misery, really.
Oh, that's sad. Well, but the game that everyone's looking at was 1313, wasn't it? That's incredibly good looking Star Wars license that people thought was fake, or they thought it was a previs or something.
The thing is, I mean, because they came from a film background, and obviously, you know, LucasArts own ILM, ILM, Industrial Light and Magic. So all their games graphically looked amazing. I mean, they knew how to make great-looking games, but
I literally said the same thing on, I can't remember whose comment it was on Facebook, but when it was breaking, that I can't remember playing. Yeah. LucasArts, good game in the last 10 years. There have been some good third-party ones published under them. I used to love Battlefront, but that wasn't them. and always the worst Star Wars games were always them, and the best ones weren't. As far as I could see, it just became a name that was tagged on to things. Really, didn't really, you know, have a wasn't a core to LucasArts. Right, I could see, but I didn't.
I mean, the best Star Wars games were Lego Star Wars.
Oh, yeah, again, it's another one, yeah.
The official statement, they said, after evaluating our position in the games market, we've decided to shift LucasArts from an internal development to a licensing model, minimizing the company's risk while achieving a broader portfolio of quality Star Wars games.
Reading between the lines, it's by minimizing our risk and making the most money for the least
possible.
I think the reason why a lot of the press have been kind of over the top about this is because when the deal was announced that Disney were buying, you know, all of that LucasArts stuff, they thought that this might be the spark of life for LucasArts, and they might take it upon themselves to reinvigorate them, when, you know, really what they were doing was buying the licenses. They're not particularly interested in LucasArts.
Cause buy the license and kill the division.
Disney's a far bigger name than LucasArts ever was.
Although, I mean, saying that, Disney haven't got a great reputation for internal development of console
games.
No,
but I think these days it doesn't, you know, if someone's buying a Disney game, because it's such a big name in just terms of entertainment, I don't think anyone specifically thinks back to other games they've done. It's just Disney, isn't it?
Did Disney actually directly produce Where's My Water, or is that just a, like,
no,
they publish it? Or?
No, the interesting thing, so Disney Mobile is really good because they bought Tapulous, who made Tap Tap Revenge.
Oh, okay.
So they've got a really good mixture of internal development, and also they do obviously a lot of third party stuff. So they work with Imanji for the Temple Run games, and they
gotcha.
Work with Get Set Games for the. They did a Mega Run game based on Monster Inc. And they've actually proved to be really. And I think it's interesting because if you think about how Disney made money for how many decades, it's basically it has really good licenses. And over time, you know, you want to use your licenses in a quite a sparing manner, because now you have a global license and a global hit on something like, you know, an Angry Birds scale, and that's hundreds of millions of dollars and generates, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars potentially every year. So it's much more important about making a few good games. And actually, you kind of think any developer now who comes up with, you kind of thinks, oh, well, you know, I'd really quite like to make a Star Wars game. They'd love to do a Star Wars game. As you're talking to the guys Get Set Games, who did the Monsters Inc. Run game, and they were like, we were talking to guys at Pixar. Yeah, they were just like, I couldn't stop them talking. They were like, for half an hour, they were going on about how they couldn't believe they met, you know, they were talking to the guys with Pixar, the guy who designed, you know, the Monsters Inc. characters and stuff. And
the
developers love working with Disney, so it makes much more sense for them to outsource that kind of stuff. And because it's really hard, I think, to generate passion within a big company like that for a product when you're working at it all the time. Whereas for an excellent developer, like whoever's going to get to work on the next Star Wars games, can you imagine how pleased they're going to be? Like, you know, the game might be pumped, but, you know, they're going to be so passionate about doing a really good job, and that makes much more sense to those big companies, I think.
Yeah. And they can get excited about it, and also they'll have to do tie-ins for the new movies, which may be a little bit better. At least they can't be as bad anyway.
I think it's good news, really. So, and even within the, you know, it's not good when people lose their jobs, but even within those teams, if they're really passionate about, you know, I'm sure they can get some funding to set up their own teams out of that, you know.
Fair enough. It's gone and we're not that fussed. It's that's the verdict over here. Well, let's move on to some things that are very much alive and well. The guys behind Ravensword, Crescent Moon Games, have pulled the lid off a new project they're working on. It's called Exiles. It's a third-person action RPG. And instead of going down the classic fantasy route that the Ravensword has done, they've gone for a sci-fi environment this time.
Sci-fi,
yes, one of those.
I met her once. Yeah,
yeah, she's kind of neon looking. It's good. But it's kind of based around the same engine from what we can make out as the Ravensword series, but this time set in space. Actually, it's kind of a dune environment. Lots of sand everywhere, big bugs crawling out the ground to come and munch you, and you've got a selection of weapons and you're blasting your way through. Did either of you guys get a look at this one?
I have found my notes on this one.
Fantastico. Tell us about Exiles, John. Was it any good?
The problem with Crescent Moon is they literally show you like about 17 games.
Oh, really?
This one they showed a bit more about, actually. Okay, yeah, so it's basically using the Ravensword engine, third-person sci-fi action shooter based on a foreign planet. It's a whole kind of free roaming kind of RPG style thing with a bit more action. Did it single player only. It used to be when you saw games, they go, this is like alpha, or this is pre-beta, or this is, you know, all these kind of phrases they're using.
Pre-alpha, isn't it?
The phrase everyone's using this year is pre-alpha. It's kind of like, what does that mean? Pre-alpha.
It's a sketch. They just show you a picture on a piece of paper and they go, there you go.
Like alpha is, we've kind of started making it, you can play it. And like beta is, oh, we're fixing bugs. But pre-alpha is
a flick book.
I don't know. And just knowing the Crescent Moon guys, I mean, they publish an awful lot of games, but for their internal dev teams, they have not even a handful of people. It's literally a tiny, tiny team. So I got no firm answer on when on earth this would come out.
What I've heard is that they're hoping by the end of this year, but whatever that means, you know.
Yeah, I would. Yeah. So yeah, it looked very Starship Troopers, but I don't know if that's because there's loads of bugs coming up the ground, and they look like, you know, clearly inspired by that film. I don't know if that was because it was so pre-alpha, that was just kind of like the one enemy they'd kind of put into the game. So whether they're going to be like a broader set of things going on there.
Like Starship Troopers in the violence and then Dune in the environment, because it's these big sprawling deserts from what we saw.
Yeah, yeah. And there's stuff like kind of hover bikes and kind of that mount. But yeah, it was so early. I would hesitate to make too much kind of a firm.
I've always kind of admired the Ravensword games, in as much as they're trying to do this great big RPG experience and put it on the iPad. I've never been 100% convinced by them, to be honest.
I think the problem is because they're such a small team, and because there's such kind of enormous environments and such like enormous, you know, those RPGs just have to pack it full of content, and they're not doing procedural stuff or anything like that. They pretty much have to make it all. They can never be as kind of polished, I guess, as some other games can do when you're really focused on. It's like, you know, it's like the 5 hours you play, and we're going to spend like the next month really making sure every single bit of that is a really polished experience. So, yeah, I think if you're an RPG fan, you kind of go, wow, this is really great. I'm playing this on my phone. Which is certainly the first Raven Swords. That was just an amazing thing. They were like the first people to.
Yeah, it's very impressive, the ambition of it.
But I kind of think over time, they're probably. I mean, it's interesting because they're still, even with this one, they're kind of suggesting it's going to be a paid game with kind of in-app purchases. But so it's kind of like attracting a fan base. But they've always been pretty successful financially. I mean, they're not out of the Angry Birds, but there's always, you know, tens of thousands of people, even hundreds of thousands of people who buy that kind of experience to play it. So I think they're a little bit kind of playing to the choir, what I was thinking. Yeah.
Well, according to Presessian, how do you pronounce his name? Josh Presessian?
Josh. I call him Josh.
That's a good idea, actually. According to Josh...
He's got a really firm handshake as well, I tell you. He broke my hand at GDC. He's only a little guy, and he shook his hand. Oh, Josh.
Well, old strong arm Josh says that the team is really going to try for this year for a release. So take that with however much salt you want to take it with.
Do you want me to tell you about the funniest game from Crescent Moon?
Go on, then.
Monkey Boxing. Monkey Boxing. They got a game called Monkey Boxing, not Monkey Tennis. Seeing it was the fifth game he showed me, we still weren't finished. I didn't want to take too much time trying to explain Monkey Tennis.
Okay, fair enough. I'll touch on this one quickly, and then you can tell us a little bit more about GDC. There was a game called Battle Dungeon that was released late last year. It was kind of a multiplayer turn-based strategy title set in dungeons, obviously. And the idea was that you'd purchase it. It was reasonably on the pricier end. I think it was £2.99, $4.99. And then everybody hooks up online and battles one another in these kind of tile-based fantasy environments. It got taken down within the first week because the servers basically overloaded, not due to thousands upon thousands of people buying the game legally and playing it, but due to thousands of people pirating the game and overwhelming the servers and forcing them to shut it down. That completely killed the game because the game's AI runs off the servers, so essentially the thing couldn't work without them being active. So what they did was they went back to the drawing board and they recreated the thing as a single player game, a single player campaign, and it got put back on the App Store this week as Battle Dungeon Risen. So you can get hold of it right now. I think it's £1.49, £1.99. It was just curious to see it back up again, or quite nice to see it back up again, because I know you covered it, didn't you, Keith? You talked to the guys when it originally went down.
Yeah, we covered it on Biz. Yeah, it was quite an interesting story, just because of the nature of piracy that essentially taken down this game. And they were offering refunds, weren't they?
They were pretty good about it. Yeah, they wouldn't. I mean, considering that they got pretty gypped. I mean, it was a quite a good example of a case of this is how piracy really can damage things or take down smaller
But equally, I think there's potentially a certain amount of naivety that how you structure your server infrastructure. I mean, I think because obviously a lot of these games, there's a lot of these online games now are kind of the top grossing stuff, and I think you do need to be pretty careful about how you can scale stuff, and that does mean piracy. So I wonder whether, well, I'm sure what they've done is they've reworked their AI, because you don't really, in most cases, don't need to run AI off a server.
Player version now lives on the actual app itself. There was no solo campaign at all in the original game, but now you've got 12 new solo scenarios that you can tackle. If you wanted to try it, you can get it for $149.99 right now. Now, you guys, obviously you've been roaming around GDC this whole week, coughing and or sneezing on people, and occasionally taking notes.
Things, we weren't coughing and sneezing then. We were fit, healthy, vibrant.
Surely someone sneezed upon you at some point. There was a contagion thing that happened.
I was even
you got bitten by a monkey.
I was even using that hand. That
a boxing monkey.
I was even using that hand gel stuff that kind of sanitizes
really?
Everything. So I should have been properly sanitized. But.
Yes, it's all probably all that kissing, I suspect.
You're not supposed to mention that.
Yeah, and John does the double cheek kiss when he meets anyone, so.
Darling. Yes. I get a lot of that. My girlfriend's Colombian, so everyone's very kind of tactile in that culture, which I like, which I think is a good thing. But you can totally freak people out with that. British people, you so much as go up and, you know, extend your hand and they freak out and back off and assume you're going to try and kill them or something. But you guys have been wandering around GDC, so you've been exposed to all the newest and most exciting things, all the stuff that people are just revealing. What was the most interesting stuff you saw? What stood out for you?
Oh, gracious. Well, probably the easiest thing to talk about is we had a thing called the Big Indie Pitch, which was very cleverly arranged by Jeff Scott from 148 Apps.
Yes.
I don't really know how he came up with the idea, to be honest. I've not really got that far to kind of ask him. But basically, he kind of thought, well, everyone's at GDC, and we spend a lot of time everyone basically spends a lot of time rushing around trying to meet people. And you start late for the first meeting, and then you get later and later and later, and everyone's in a rush the entire time. But much more sensible to say all the journalists are going to be at this place and all the developers can come and meet us at this place, and much more efficient. So he came up with this idea called the Big Indie Pitch, which basically got, I think there's like 9 or 10 the top games, he basically got like 9 or 10 journalists from the bigger sites. So there was us, 148 Apps, Touch Arcade, Slide to Play, IGN, cool. Chua or whatever. Anyway, a whole bunch of these guys. And we just basically sat at tables. And for 2 hours, developers came round and had 5 minutes to basically pitch us a game.
And also it was like gaming speed dating.
Yes, and very much like that. And it was really funny. So Jeff, who's quite a large chap, was like standing on a big stage going, 1 minute, come on, move. He was like in American accent, obviously. So he was very organized, very good to getting us all going. But cleverly, I just filmed all the pitches. So if you go to our YouTube channel, which is Pocket Gamer UK, basically there's 22 pitch videos, not the best quality in the world. It was quite dark. But basically, I just kind of interview the people who kind of turn up and show the games. As you'd expect, basically anyone could sign up. So there was kind of a mixture of kind of people doing first time games and then some people kind of showing games that are already out. But there were a few kind of real kind of superstar guys who were there who were probably worth having a quick chat about. Mm-hmm. So I guess Beaver Tap Games, fairly well known for Mickey Shorts.
Yeah,
so they've shown a new game, sequel Mickey Hooks.
Is it Mickey? I always pronounced it Mikey.
Mikey, sorry. Yes, no, you're right.
Okay. I don't know if it was in translation.
Yeah, looked really nice. Our friend over on Biz and other places, Lady Shotgun, was showing her Buddha Figure game, which is now coming to Android, Windows Phone, and BlackBerry.
Cool.
Rocket Cat Games, again, pretty well known for all manner of fairly hardcore RPG experiences. So they've got a new game called Wayward, which is their kind of sequel to Mage Dungeon, which is a super hardcore procedurally generated dungeon crawler game that he said is as hard as hardcore mode on Diablo. You do get checkpoints, but look, I mean, if you like that kind of game, it looks kind of the ultimate of that kind of like dungeon crawler. Can be free to play with one character class. Then if you want other character classes, you can kind of buy other character classes from that.
Okay.
I can't pronounce Niam Yam, who the guys used to be at Rage. They were showing, these Japanese names, Tengami? I think that's how you pronounce it, which is, we've seen it before. It's a really beautiful game based in a Japanese pop-up book.
Oh, okay.
It's absolutely kind of gorgeous artwork. And basically, you have it's a, like a Paper Mario style thing, so it's all done in paper. So your character's like a 2D paper thing.
Yeah.
And it's a very kind of like a reflection puzzler. So you're kind of like folding the environment as a, as in a pop-up book to kind of create. If there's like a if there's a bridge is broken, you're kind of folding it, folding the paper, folding the world effectively to let your character move through the world.
That sounds interesting.
In development for a long time, so I saw that last year at the develop conference in July. So they spent a lot of time on that game. Looks really amazing. I'm not quite sure when it's coming out. Pretty soon. A really funny game called Ring Run Circus from a Uruguayan developer, which is basically it's like a platformer with rings. So they're calling it a ringformer.
Ringformer.
Really nicely done, actually. Just really nice, really good kind of presentation and artwork. And basically, it's a game where you'll kind of have characters and you're running around rings. So you're kind of like you can move between the inside and the outside of the ring to avoid obstacles. And then if a ring's interlocking with another ring, if you tap at the right time, you move on to the other ring. A bit like the what was that game from Yo-Yo Games?
I know the one you're talking about. It was one of those silhouette games, wasn't it?
It's like that. Very action orientated. This one's a bit more. Got three characters and they have different attributes, but just really nicely done. I mean, single taps. Oh, there's one that we have written about before called Third Eye Crime, which is a.
I saw that. We covered that last week, actually. Yeah.
They're an ex-Bungie. Are they ex-Bungie? I think they are ex-Bungie. They're definitely ex-console, high-profile console guys.
Okay.
Shot games. And it's going back to line drawing. It's a really nice kind of line drawing, like SimCity-style kind of artwork with really lovely kind of internal cutscenes and graphics. It's like a film noir thing.
Yeah.
And you're a telepathic jewel thief. Or art thief.
Art thief, I think it is. Paintings and stuff, and you can sort of see where where the guards are going to walk.
So a lot of it is kind of you can see where the enemies are. So it's not really stealth, but you kind of see where the guards are. So you're kind of like drawing them off into areas where they think you are, but you're not. So it seemed like it had quite a good layer of kind of like stealth in that. That was really nice. Probably the one I liked the most actually was he's pretty well known. A guy called Matt Ricks who did Train Yard back in the day, and he's working with another Canadian developer called Owen Goss, and they formed a new company just to confuse us all called Milkbag Games, and they've got a game called Snow Siege. These guys are very, very talented developers, so it's no surprise that their game is really interesting. But
Trainyard is excellent, yeah.
Yeah, he's not done anything for years, and I've not seen him for a while, so it's kind of really nice to kind of meet up with him. Apparently it started off as a basketball game, he says. It is a 2D side-scrolling town defense game, plus collectible card game, plus Tetris.
So, oh, right, okay. Nice and easy to categorize.
So basically, during the night, you build your defenses to your base, which are basically Tetris, what do you call them? Tetris blocks.
Oh, they've got a special name, haven't they? Damn it.
So, tetranoids or something. I don't know.
Yeah, tetroids or something like that.
And you stack up these blocks as like defenses, and you can build like tower defense, like active, you know, guns and things.
Okay.
Bomb. So you do that during the night, and then during the day, these snowmen attack you. So waves of snowmen in tanks and snowmen in aircraft attack you, and you have a little boy who's on a jetpack you can kind of control as well. And basically, you can play it different ways. So you can play it quite active, where you're using the little boy to attack in a more kind of castle defense type role. But basically as the snowmen attack you, the kind of walls that you have created will like fall down and crush them. So that's using the Tetris style thing as well. And then the cards are used for kind of to update your base. And it's really simple kind of artwork. But you can just see there's lots of, they're hoping to have lots of different ways of playing it. So you can kind of, most people will play it, I guess, kind of doing a bit of everything, but some kind of real hardcore guys can maybe just use the Tetris shapes and just have these really intricate things that all fall down and crush things. And they're a little bit bonkers. I mean, they are a little bit those kind of creative, like, bonker type guys.
But that's quite good, isn't it? You want some kind of...
From single-person indie teams, you know, no big team would ever come up with something like this. I mean, it is...
It would get suited to death, wouldn't it, along the way?
Yeah. You just go, who's this appeal to? And I think that's the most interesting thing, certainly when you have these pitch things. You know, a lot of people are doing, say, fairly generic... type games, still people doing platformers and people doing, you know, it's like hate, you know, kind of people looking to Clash of Clans and Heyday, those kind of games that have been successful, a version of that. But there's still these kind of like bonkers. I mean, it's quite a lot. I saw quite a lot this year of people using. We've seen it before. People using match three mechanics and hybridizing it with lots of other things. So the guys who used to make Age of Empires are doing a game called Caveman Smash, where you're kind of like doing match three stuff, and then on that board, that becomes like the play board. So you're putting characters on there, and there's like battles going on while you're matching stuff. And I think you need kind of passion for the games, and you need to not be doing clone stuff. And I think that kind of stuff shows through in the end. Oh, and the other one that I should mention as well is the Half-Brick game, Fish Out of Water. That was
I saw that today for the first time. Yeah,
a lot of journalists were a bit sceptical about that, I have to say. So I think it's out. Is it 18th or something?
It's out soon. With good reason, do you think? Is it? Because, I mean, from the images I saw, it looks like it's going to be one of those flick and send the thing fly. Apparently, it's much more casual.
It's amazingly casual. So, basically, the main the designer, Luke Muscat, is a big surfer. So, he wanted to make a game kind of about surfing, and then in the end, he wanted to make a game about flicking stones, and in the end, he turned up making a game where you flick fish. So, it's kind of like the actual what you do is you pick up a fish and you just flick it. But there's six different fish, and they have like completely different mechanics on how they bounce on the water.
Right.
So you have like a big, like a blue whale, which obviously doesn't bounce terribly well because it's heavy. And then you have like a dolphin, which if you flick it, actually goes under the water and kind of bounces out. And every go you have the six fish, you choose three of them and throw them. Mm-hmm. And then your overall score, which is out of 10, is a combination of how far you threw them and how many bounces they did.
Right, like skimming a stone and trying to get it to bounce as many times.
A bit like Jetpack Joyride, you collect kind of boosts. And the boost you have is shared between those three characters, so it's a bit of a case of knowing which character to use the boost on, and the water conditions change and wind conditions change, depending. This is a global system.
All right. What I want to find out was, is it a pull back and release like Angry Birds, or is it a swipe and flick?
Right forward. So you basically just choose one, then just kind of flick it. Just launch.
Flick forwards.
Flick forwards, yeah.
Gotcha. Okay.
I think some people were suggesting it looks really nice, but it's kind of hard to know how much depth it's going to be, how much replayability you're going to want to. Not like, obviously, in Jetpack Joyride, I kind of did the furthest distance. This is a combination of bouncing and length across three characters.
Right.
But there's a leaderboard system, but you can only be in one leaderboard at one time. You can go on the global leaderboard, but then you'll be like a ranking player, or with your friends, you'll be doing it every week too. So, I don't know. I think Half-Brick definitely know what they're doing.
Wow. So, you saw a lot then. Keith, did you manage to see anything? I know you were doing like more perhaps businessy stuff, but I understand that there was a game, your favourite game, in fact, the sequel to that. You saw that there, didn't you?
My favourite game.
Yeah.
I wasn't at this this dating pitching thing.
You'd already scored by that point, I assume.
Well, of course, naturally.
Of course, of course. So, you were flirting with...
Muffins.
You saw your Uruguayan friends, didn't you?
I did see my Uruguayan friends, yeah. I saw... It's not Kingdom Rush 2, is it? It's Kingdom Rush Frontiers. Yes, the sequel to my favourite ever iOS game, I'd say. And essentially, I was shown various levels of this game. It's kind of more of the same, not reinventing the wheel, but just kind of more towers, more upgrades, more... Baddies, more goodies, or with the nice.
More baddies
touch
and
humor.
More goodies.
More goodies, more baddies.
Like any good sequel, John, it's bigger and better and
more. It is a literal definition of a sequel. Yeah, yeah. I get the impression that I don't think they expected it to get the fan base it got.
Oh, really?
So I think they've literally kind of thought, right, okay, if people like this, let's do more. And from what I saw, I mean, they were playing a kind of unlocked version, where they could deploy any towers they wanted. So, all tower defense games kind of rely on a balance between making sure you're still challenged. But how that is handled, I don't know. But the actual kind of upgrades themselves, and it's the kind of game I can imagine that it will last about twice as long as the first one, because in a good way, because there's just much more to do, and the locations more varied and everything. It's literally just kind of let's do what we did before and do more of it. Did look very nice.
Awesome. Any ideas on when that might be coming out? Did they give you a clue?
May.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think they said May.
Oh, fantastic.
Lovely finish, isn't it?
I'm going to get it, and I'm going to play the hell out of it, because I quite like the tower defense stuff, but I haven't done loads of them, and being as it comes so highly recommended,
it put me back, actually, because I knew I was going to see them. So I got a new iPod Touch, so I put the first one on for the plane journey. Mm-hmm. And it's actually been updated several times since I last played it, so there's kind of actually a bit of new stuff in there. And I forgot how bad I am and how much you have to train your brain back into being good at a good tower defense game,
getting all tactical and whatnot.
Yeah, it's just changing one tower or even putting it down at a different time can completely swing the battle the other way.
Yeah,
and this does look, I mean, this new one with the new environments just looks even more gorgeous. It's exactly the same kind of style. They haven't upgraded But obviously, the first time people were playing, they were playing on iPad 1s and 2s. Now they're playing it on 3s and 4s and minis. Or well, actually, the mini screen's not that good, is it? But you know what I mean? It does look even better in the same way. But yeah, most of the time I was, you know, just eating muffins and stuff. And
Can I quickly mention some more games, very quickly?
Oh, go on, then.
Okay, so I saw Galaxy on Fire Alliances, so that's some interesting updates to that big graphical over kind of update. A game from Sega called God's Rule, which is from an Icelandic company, which is it's on Facebook at the moment. It's a real-time strategy kind of game, and that's coming to iOS as well. That's really nice art style on that one. Fire Axis have a game called Haunted Hollow, which is kind of their first mobile game.
Oh, yes, we saw this. Mark played it in a
Yeah, Mark played it. Yeah, it's really, really thoughtful, actually. The guys behind it are real big kind of Magic Gathering kind of guys. So it's not a card game at all, but it's quite deep kind of strategies. So you basically, it's all head-to-head. So you're basically you're building up a house, a haunted house, and the different rooms allow you to create different kind of a unit, so like zombies and werewolves and things, and you're going into a village to haunt the village, and when you haunt a house, it becomes like a resource. So you basically the person who wins is the one who takes over the most houses, so you're trying to haunt them, but you're attacking the other guy, you're attacking his kind of creatures of the night as well. So it's an interesting battle, and then when you get to a certain stage, like the townsmen rise up and have a mob and start burning houses down. So that stage, the game could end up with one house left. That's really interesting. I mean, that's quite deep kind of strategy in that one. I also saw and this is really deep as well. Hit Ultima Forever: The Quest for Avatar, which is a full on multiplayer MMOG for mobile. I mean, that's like proper Ultima, like an Ultima 4 inspired game. I mean, it's just like,
I think we've covered massive. This as well. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's coming out from Mythic, who pretty much know all that kind of stuff. I saw the update to Real Racing 3, which has the Chevrolet cars in it, and spoke to the developer.
That was
really, really pretty impressive. And I saw one amazing game, and it was so impressive, but I can't talk about it because I'm sworn to secrecy. But it was just one of the best game design concepts, such a pure game design concept. And I also played World of Tanks Blitz, which is the mobile version of World of Tanks. Which is again was a pre-alpha, but like a proper. I mean, they're very serious about taking their massive online tank shooter game and bringing it to mobile, iOS and Android, and pretty playable actually. I mean, quite arcadey in the feel of it.
Really?
So it's got quite a long way to go, but they're very serious about bringing their games to mobile now. So that'd be interesting.
The last thing I heard of them was they're doing World of Planes now, aren't they?
Yeah, so they've got World of Tanks, then they've got this World of Tanks Blitz, then they've got one called World of Tanks Generals, which is a card-based browser game that's coming out. Then they've got World of Warships, and then they've got World of Planes, which are all, at the moment, standalone games being developed separately. But obviously the long-term plan is to create a world of attackingness that will include them all.
A world of vehicles of some kind. Wow, okay. I'm kind of scuttered I missed all this now. I'd have liked to have seen some of this. But this is all a big tease, because we can't play any of these at the moment, which is a shame. So for anyone itching to actually play some games at the moment, we did have some come out this week. Some ones we've been waiting for quite a while, actually. And unfortunately, you may not entirely like what we have to say about them. To find out what they are, let's go over to this week's new releases. First up in this week's new releases, we have The Other Brothers by 3D Attack, which was a game we were really looking forward to. It's a pixel art platformer, sort of loosely based on the idea of the Mario games. It's kind of a slightly dark take on that universe. So these brothers are supposed to be Mario and Luigi, and they're both plumbers and that. But instead of them being bright and colorful in this nice psychedelic environment with mushrooms and whatnot, they're in a fairly dirgy, dirty-looking environment, running away from mobsters for some reason, in this sort of open-world platform environment. It looks very nice, pixel art graphics that a couple of our writers are big fans of, and we were kind of really looking forward to it. It had a very troubled production, from what I remember. There were arguments over who owned the rights of it, and it got a bit acrimonious. But it finally came out, and unfortunately, it hasn't turned out all that well from what we hear. Apparently, it really looks the part, but the controls leave a lot to be desired. Our Harry, I think, gave it a 5 in the end and said, yeah, it looks good, but it really is just completely hamstrung by its controls. Which is a shame, because we had our eye on this one and hoped it might be quite good. If you wanted to have a look yourself, it's 69p or 99 cents on the App Store right now.
Is no one else bored by pixel art now?
I know what you mean. Like, pixel art, when it's done well, does look great, and obviously it does tickle a certain nostalgic part of your brain that you go, oh, isn't that nice? But the problem is, it's clearly everyone's decided this is the thing to do, and it's also the way to get yourself sort of taken seriously, like, yes, I'm doing a pixel art game because I make proper games, ooh. And so there's just this huge influx of them, and it's difficult to tell the sort of wheat from the chaff. And this one looks great, but it apparently just doesn't stand up. So what are you going to do?
Right.
The one, in complete contrast to that, there is a game that looks phenomenal. And I've been really excited about, and I played briefly last year and was really interested in it. Badland by Frogmind. These are the guys who are ex-developers from Redlink Studios, the dudes behind Trials. And it looks absolutely stunning. And now we've played the finished game, we can concur that it really does look fantastic. It's got a silhouette game against these very colorful neon backgrounds, and it's an endless flyer, or an auto flyer rather, because it's level based, where you're controlling this sort of ball of fluff with little wings, kind of barely big enough to keep him in the air, and it controls in the same way that Tiny Wings does. So you just tap the screen to make him fly and let go, and he drops down. The idea is the screen kind of creeps forward, and you're supposed to get through these environments that are chock full of weird, like, contraptions and spinning fans and little machines waiting to crush you and all that. So it's kind of got that dark tone that Limbo had, mixed with sort of endless flyer mechanics. We were really excited about this one. I played a bit, and it seemed like it was very promising. Unfortunately, Harry's reviewed this one and said that while it is glorious to look at, you feel disconnected from what's going on. Apparently, there's a lot of stuff that just happens on screen, and you feel like you're in limited control of it. So despite how cool some of the things look, like you collect power-ups and you split into a million different creatures, and then as you go through these machines, many of them get killed and crushed and sucked up and things explode, and as long as one makes it out the other end, you're okay. But the problem is, apparently, it feels like you're being just propelled along by the environment and just kind of watching these things happen, and that you have little to do with whether you've completed the level effectively or not. And so there's not much of a reward to be had from completing it. I think I am still going to download it. I do sort of want to play, but slightly disappointed by that. I was really, really looking forward to it. I think it's gotten okay reviews, but it certainly wasn't as good as we were all sort of hoping for, or I was hoping for anyway. So those were the two sort of big releases on the horizon. We went, it's a bit meh. On the other hand, Tekken Card Tournament came out. Did any of you guys see this in, like, pre-production or whatever?
I did actually see a cool feature of it last week.
Oh, you did?
But I think, it's one interesting thing that they're taking it completely cross-platform. So it's iOS and PC.
And Android as well, I think.
Everything. So, and I kind of think, so for me, like, I just, to a degree, don't get card battling games, particularly the more archaic kind of Japanese ones. So I think sometimes, I mean, it's interesting. Like this week, there's the Tekken one, and there's the Warner's one, the Batman Injustice one.
That's
as well.
Right. That's the other one we're going to talk about. Yeah.
So I think there's, and obviously, like, is it Gree have done the or is it Gree or DNA? I think DNA have done the Marvel ones and stuff. So I think there's a way of presenting these kind of things in a bit more Western friendly manner. But it's interesting from that point of view. But the really cool thing about Tekken, the Tekken card one, is, and it's not actually out yet, is they're doing physical cards as well.
So right. I remember.
They're doing an augmented reality kind of. I mean, it's a bit of a gimmick, because I think when you buy the cards, there's just like a code. There's a QR code to enter them in the game, or I guess effectively unlock them within the game. And there's like just a big code, like a number letter code that you can put in as well.
Yeah.
But also you can use your camera to get augmented reality, so you'll see like the character kind of pop out the card. So I think the cards are coming in June in the States. I'm not quite sure if they'll be available elsewhere, but in the future, they're kind of looking at ways of, if you put the moment you put one card down and like the character just comes up and does this stuff. They're looking at ways, if you put like two cards down, they'd actually fight each other, which would be absolutely bonkers. But knowing how augmented reality is a little bit ropey, I don't know how long that'll take. If you again, I have a video of it actually. I'm trying to think. I think it's on the pocketgamer.biz YouTube rather than Pocket Gamer, just to confuse people.
Okay.
But yeah, if you go to Pocket Gamer Biz on YouTube, yeah. So we've got like a little video of the Tekken Card Tournament augmented reality physical cards.
Well, it's much more interesting to look at than a standard card game, because what you've got is an actual sort of 3D Tekken fight playing out in the background. And you have three controls. You can choose focus, strike, or block. And then when you choose whichever attack you use, they kind of get into a little sort of 5 seconds of combat in the background.
It's like a paper, scissors, stone thing.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. So it's an interesting way of making the card battler kind of come alive a little bit more visually. So I think you're right, more friendly to Western audiences. We'll tie that into the Injustice game, because we mentioned it last week, but that's just come out today as well. So this is Injustice Gods Among Us, and it's the tie-in to the console brawler game. We said last week that being it's the same guys who were handling NetherRealm, the same guys who did Batman Arkham City Lockdown, that we assumed it would be slightly different and probably more gesture-based controls, because that's what they did before. True to point, it is that. So the brawlers are controlled by your fights play out, and you kind of tap on screen to make little kind of punches and blocks and things, and then you do gesture commands for more complicated, more powerful attacks. But backing this up is this collectible card element as well. So you play the fights physically, and then characters and I think powers as well are represented by cards, and if you collect the cards and level them up, obviously you'll be able to get access to more fighters and more combat, that sort of thing. We haven't reviewed that one yet. It's free to play. Both Tekken Card Tournament and Injustice are free to play. And so, as with all these ones, we tend to do long-term reviews. I know Peter does a lot of the freemium stuff, so rather than just reviewing it on day one, it's often quite difficult to tell with freemium games, because you have to play to a point and see at what time they start steering you towards the in-app payments and how much you can get from them. So we generally do these three-part reviews over a week. So I suspect we'll certainly get one from Injustice up, and I expect Tekken will be reviewed as well. So I'll have to report back. But if you want to go and find out for yourself, both of them are available for free now, iPhone and iPad, both, I think. The other ones we'll quickly mention, just because sort of limited time. We've got Slayin. S-L-A-Y-I-N, which is kind of a very, and again, pixel art retro thing, where it's basically, they describe it as the super crate box of the RPG.
But how could, surely that's like a tautology. The whole point of super crate box was it was like a kind of a one idea game.
If you had
an RPG with only one, you've leveled up, the game's ended.
Yeah, that's true. But I think the idea is that it has role-playing elements in it, so you're leveling and collecting items and that sort of thing, but it plays out at the same speed, the kind of pace of Super Crate Box. It's dead frantic. And apparently it's like it's one-hit kills, and you burn through the levels in a matter of minutes, and that's the idea. Apparently it can get a little repetitive after a while, but it's very good fun at the beginning. So that might be worth a look. 69p 99 cents for that. Duke Nukem 2 came out.
Long pause.
Yeah, I mean,
why are people still making these games?
Oh, I don't know. But it's by Interceptor Entertainment. Obviously, they've gone and ported it, it's the side-scrolling Duke Nukem games that were released before 3D and obviously before forever.
Before anyone cared about it.
Yeah, and before the license got big, and people, I guess it's just because the Duke Nukem name is attached, but after Forever, I don't see what weight it has anymore. Yeah, Forever was just dreadful, and I don't see what clout the license has at the moment.
It's like LucasArts again, isn't it?
It's just notorious for being notorious, really.
Yeah, it's from another time, and when you saw the game and it's doing all that kind of, hey, we're cool and sexist in a fun, ironic way, you're like, it's not really fun or ironic anymore. We've kind of passed that, and we're on to something else.
I felt the same about former podcast host Will Wilson, actually.
Ooh.
That cool sexist vibe, we're over that now.
Oh, no, I'm the new postmodern host who's way past all that, and whenever I make sexist comments, there's three layers of irony.
Whenever you make sexist comments, when do you ever make sexist comments? You're very well brought up.
You're so unsexist. You don't even have a gender.
I'm androgynous
somewhere in the middle
in my punditry. Exactly. Now, well, I have to be the middleman. So, well, I think when I was a guest on the podcast before Mr. Wilson,
that's true. Yeah,
I was a bit more opinionated, but now I have to you get to be the opinionated ones, and I have to kind of marshal you two and keep a straight line down the middle. Like, if I start telling all my racist jokes, people will just start checking out, the less said about the sexes, the better. You know. So Duke Nukem 2 is £1.49.99 if you want it. Don't know why you would, but you crack on. Is there anything else of interest? What do they do? Oh, Overkill 2. Have you guys heard about this? Because this was sort of news to me.
I know. Yeah, I know the Overkill guys.
Yeah, it's a
massively successful kind of a shooter range game.
Yeah, that's right. It was a it's a shooting range game, and it's really kind of fetishizes the whole gun thing. So you can it's just a shooting range game in terms of the gameplay. Point shoot. There you go. But there's lots of stuff to do with getting your weapons and equipping your weapons and looking at them in 3D and going, oh, that lovely, lovely gun. So I think that's pretty much what it's aimed at. It's aimed at gun nuts, basically. People who like.
I'll say our little write-up of it is a little bit political, actually, just reading what we've said.
Yeah, well, I saw Immotion, and I'm not a huge fan of these things, but it does seem to be designed specifically for gun fetishists.
It is. The original one was, more of a hit. I think it came out on Android first, or certainly more of a hit on Android kind of versus sometimes these
free to play wasn't the original.
Yeah, and it was. I mean, for those kind of things, it was fairly kind of addictive. Even if you, in a sense, you're just tapping on the screen. So it's, to gamify that thing is quite easy because you're kind of you're kind of stabilizing your gun, and you're getting better accuracy, and you're increasing the magazine size, and so you can kind of see how it really plays well into the free to play model. And ironically, they're not American; they're Czech, I think.
This is Crane Balls.
Yeah. Their game before that was a 3D version of Angry Birds underwater using fish. So they have a broad
view. Is that what it was called?
That wasn't what it was called.
Really, Angry Birds Underwater.
That's what it was, though.
Fair enough. Well, you can get the second entry in that series, Overkill 2, for free on iPhone and iPad right now. If you fancy looking at guns and going, whoa, those guns.
Free.
Beautiful. Right, that'll do for the new releases. We will briefly talk about the games we've been playing this week over in the What We've Been Playing section.
What We've Been Playing!
Okay, this week we'll start with... Let's start with Keith for change. Keith, what have you been playing this week?
Actually, you see, I did play something, but it wasn't a mobile game.
Doesn't count in, does it?
There was a version of Space Invaders on my plane which didn't load properly.
On your plane? Well, actually, the TV screen on the plane?
On the best plane I was on, you had a little TV screen in the chair in front of you and had a game section, so I started it up just out of curiosity, and Space Invaders, I think it might have been a clone, but it was there. And
how do you play? Is it touchscreen or is it a little controller?
You have a little remote. You have a little remote where you can play left and right, and okay, but it didn't load, so I suppose technically I didn't play it. But
that's what you've been playing this week,
very much. That's my game's highlight.
Okay, great.
Well, I mean, I've been playing a lot of the First Kingdom Rush, but that doesn't count, does it?
No, so. I suppose not. Yeah, you've waxed lyrical about that one before, so I guess.
But I don't think I've ever mentioned it actually. But yeah,
we've talked about it. I've coaxed it out of you because I know it's a sweet spot for you. So I tickle that sweet spot a little bit like that. And then you go, oh, Kingdom Rush is amazing. It's sweet. Okay, so we'll let you off. You failed to play a clone of a plain remote controller.
Yeah, it didn't load.
Sterling work, sir. All right, then. How about you, John?
I didn't even get that far.
Ah, nightmarish. Yeah. Oh, well, I suppose you've all been playing like 15 seconds of 1,000 games rather than one.
It's something like that, yeah.
I guess, yeah. Well, in that case, I'll talk briefly about what I've been playing because we've had a lot of GDC chatter.
It's all about you, isn't it, James? It's always about you.
Yeah, well, you know, this is the iPhone and iPad James Gilmore
podcast.
That's
what I've been doing, honestly.
Well, I kind of backtracked a little bit. And it's an odd one, too. I wanted to play something that wasn't quite so mainstream and was a little bit weird, and it's actually from way back. It arrived on Android late last year, but it had been out on iOS for quite a while. It's called Robo 5. And it's by Yugosoft. Yugosoft.
You what? Yugosoft?
Yeah. Yugosoft. There's an extra U and an O in there. I
Yugosoft.
Yeah. Oh, God, no. And there I just...
is this another April Fool's?
No, this one isn't. Oh, yeah,
I heard that about you.
I should probably... Oi, how dare you, sir? How dare you? You heard nothing. We've had comments about you and your snorty giggling on Twitter, actually. People have been saying, yeah, the podcast, quite like that. One guy has a bad laugh and the other one snorts all the time.
I think Pete's got the bad laugh.
Clearly, Pete's the mad laugh. And Keith's the snort, because whenever we say anything that could possibly be a double entendre, you get from Keith.
That's just my flatulence. That's nothing to do with it.
Well, Yugosoft Waiting for it. There we go. Came up with this game called Robo 5. I was kind of drawn to it because it reminded me of a game mechanic in another game, and I thought one couldn't have been cloning the other. Could it? Could it possibly? And based on the dates, I'm not really sure. Have you guys played or seen Catherine? That...
Yeah, no, she was around.
Yes, yes. God, this is fraught with peril, this description. I had no idea. Catherine was that... it was imported from Japan, a game that people campaigned to get it over here, actually. It's this kind of weird psychosexual quasi-roleplay minigame drama thing in which you're a guy and you're dating two girls and cheating on one with the other, and at night you have these bizarre dreams. Then you have to climb these series of boxes. It's kind of like a box puzzler in which you've got stacks of the thing, and they kind of move out to form ladder formations so you can climb up and up and up and up. And in the Catherine, you're being stalked by these weird figments of your imagination, strange demon goats and stuff. Robo 5 is essentially that minigame made into a game just by itself. It stars a little robot character, and it's literally sort of the same thing. You are presented with this kind of tower of boxes, and you have to move the boxes around in an orientation so that you can climb over them and get to the top and reach the exit. It's a very nice-looking game. It's done in a... I don't know, everything's very kind of rust-coloured and lots of browns and oranges and things like that. It's got a very nice cartoony art style. The animation's really, really strong. Even the menu screens are impressive looking. It seems to be very, very well thought out from a sort of design point of view, visually anyway. The gameplay is sort of interesting. I like the idea of the puzzling. It's quite kind of, you know, logical thinking is required, and some of the puzzles get a little bit obscure as you're not quite sure which bit you should move to get where, and they introduce new controls as you kind of go along. So whilst you're initially tapping on the next box to move to it, you can start tapping kind of way in the distance to kind of clamber over lots of boxes in one go, and it gets really, really complicated as to which bits you have to move in and move out. It's kind of almost like a, I don't know, interactive Rubik's Cube thing. It's a bit complex. Problem is, controls are a bit wonky, it feels like. When you're trying to tap to get onto the box, it seems a little bit unintuitive. So rather than tapping where you want him to go, you kind of tap on the box that you want him to stand upon.
Yeah.
And then you have to also use tap and swipe controls to move boxes. So you're using similar commands to move the robot and move the boxes. And they kind of trip over one another. So I think it works better in Catherine, because when you're using dual stick control and you've got loads of buttons, it's much easier to kind of control one dude with one stick and move the boxes with the other, and it's an easy separation. When you're trying to do the same thing on a touch screen, it doesn't seem to translate as well. I think it's 69p? Yeah, 69p99. It got lots of strong reviews from App Store types. People are obviously enjoying it.
App Store types.
App Store types.
What does that mean? App Store types.
Customer reviews. That's what I was looking for. But you know, App Store shoppers have given it very generous ratings, actually. But I don't think it got particularly huge. And I was just attracted by the art style, and I thought that looks familiar, and it did. But I'm not 100% convinced. Neat idea though, and just a shame didn't quite work in its execution. Before we go, actually, I should probably address, I'm sure you guys didn't listen to last week's podcast, but we did a little announcement beforehand explaining about the new podcast that we were going to be doing.
Oh.
Yeah, the N-Gage podcast. I'm going to talk about all the N-Gage games.
Oh, this is the funny thing.
This is the funny thing. There we go. There's a reason that the podcast went up later on. It wasn't just because it was Easter and we were off on Friday. But yes, it went up on Monday. And obviously the little announcement we made was what passes for a joke in the technology world. Because obviously the N-Gage is an outmoded platform. Ha ha ha. Jokes on you guys.
So we're doing Vita next week then, is that?
Oh, how could you? Yeah, we are actually, yeah. Sorry. So yes, don't worry about that. We're not going to do an N-Gage podcast.
But what if we got an amazing response?
Yeah, I know, everyone's like, about time. I've been dying to find out. But no, that's not going to be happening. But obviously we will be doing new stuff with our own podcast in the future. So it was half true. We just lied about the formats. So don't go looking for subscriptions, because they're not there. If you did go looking for subscriptions, though, for an N-Gage podcast, then hats off to you, because really, that shows a level of commitment and loyalty that frankly, I don't possess. So kudos.
It's the kind of loyalty Nokia could have done with 5 years ago.
Exactly, exactly. Whereas you're left flying the flag now.
I don't know what you mean.
Oh, I think you...
I never mentioned Kingdom Rush or Nokia. Neither of things ever get mentioned by me.
Absolutely not. Well, you can join us again next week to not talk about Nokia on next week's show. Hopefully we'll get Peter back as well. I don't know if you'll both be around. Maybe do a whole group reuniting session, because either Peter's here and you're away, or vice versa.
I'm away next week.
Barely get the four together in one place. Yeah. It's too much awesome for
and
us.
And I'm away the week after as well.
Well, that's good. No, it's good. You got a lot off your chest this week, I feel, John. You shared us all your GDC stories. So go away.
A lot of phlegm as well.
A lot of phlegm from your mutual illnesses. Less kissing, you two. I know you're fond. Be professional. So that'll wrap it up for this week. Go find us on the site, as always. We've talked about it all today. The new releases are up for you to choose what should be the game of the week. So go and vote on that. Find us on Twitter and Facebook, as always. We'll be back next week for more chatter. In the meantime, enjoy your iOS gaming, and we'll see you later. Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.